The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, July the 12th, 2025.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 87, Commissioner Kent. Welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore. Ed, how you doing?
I am doing well sitting over here in my rightness.
That's right. You will Thank always you. Be my right.
I will be right. Yes.
What is that? There's a little symbol up here in the window and it went away. It's weird. It says we got two people watching, though.
Hey,
and there was much rejoicing.
All right. Well, as far as banter, I think we got a lot of the banter out at the top of the episode. We talked about Batman. We talked about Captain America. We talked about Superman. Actually, all of the banter was about superheroes this time. It's not always the case, but it did turn out to be that way this time.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this podcast episode, then that conversation will be a bonus episode the following Friday. So
okay. Well, there we go. You even know when. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, today we're looking at Commissioner Kent. It's one of the stories, or the only Superman story, to appear in Action Comics number 37. It's written by Jerry Siegel, and the artist was Paul Cassidy. Action Comics number 37 has a cover date of June 1941. But according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it was probably sold on April 22nd, 1941. And here's what happened in the story. The newspapers of Metropolis call for the firing of Police Commissioner Kennedy due to his inability to stop rampant racketeering. His replacements are all assassinated soon after taking office. The mayor then decides to make Clark Kent the new commissioner. An assassin tries to kill Clark as well, but his superpowers enable him to survive. The police summon Clark to a jeweler where they have received a tip about a robbery. Clark slips away to become Superman, then returns to stop the crooks, which are led by Kennedy, the former commissioner. With Kennedy captured, Clark retires from office and resumes his job at the Daily Planet. Ed, what'd you think of this one?
I thought there were a lot of police commissioners.
A revolving door position.
And interestingly enough, the 1/2 commissioner that we will talk about is just labeled as the Citizens Committee representative, right? Well, In World's Finest, the Citizens Committee representative plays an important part there. And I'm sitting here wondering, is this the same dude? And he like did this crap in World's Finest first. And then he was up because he meets an unfortunate end in this action story. So it can't be the reverse. He can't have been unless they both happened at the same time. But I'm like,
yeah. And
an interesting coincidence.
Right. I thought the same thing. But the only thing is that the only difference is in this story in Action Comics, it's called, I think they just refer to it as a Citizens Committee.
Mm-hmm. They give him a name, though, in the World's Finest.
In World's Finest, which will be the next episode, they refer to it like specifically as the Citizens Committee that was formed to look into unknown X, whatever that guy was called. So
you're saying the Citizens Committee isn't one thing. It's an action that pertains to something that's going on. It's formed. Okay.
What I thought. Yeah.
I prefer the other way around because it links the two stories together, which I thought was kind of cool. So, And other than just, you know, the revolving police commissioner door, a very standard on into World War II kind of Superman story. The art and the writing is consistently what this story was. I thought that recently we have seen some changes in Lois's character, and they came out in this story as far as how she is treating Clark. It seems to be a very representative example of Superman's writing right now as we're reading this action story. The World's Finest Story, I thought, was a little bit, it had a little bit different tone the yep. next one. And for those of you that don't know, I refer to both of them because we're hoping to record both in this recording, and so I have read both back to back, and so yeah. They're both top of mind. Fortunately, I don't confuse them too much, but I might. So, just entertaining. I enjoyed it.
It was fun, and I think the funniest thing about the different commissioners. Because, so you got Kennedy.
Right.
That was the mayor removes him from office. So the first commissioner is just removed from office. They replace him. So we'll say replacement one is assassinated.
His name was Larimore.
You'll go into it in detail when we do the deep dive. But
okay.
I feel, is there three total that are assassinated? Because I feel like.
No, just two. The
is it really
and third,
just two?
And then Clark.
Huh.
So the first is removed, the second and third are killed, and then Clark steps in.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have a fifth that we don't know about because Clark resigns at the end of the story.
Yeah.
So in this story, we see four, right? One, two, three, four. No, five. There had to have been five police commissioners because of this one little story. So I can't imagine what the politics of the city are like right now, because, you know, you have this police commissioner, a new one, like once a week for however long. So
it felt like they were hiring a new one every couple hours there for one point.
Yeah, you would think, but we both know that the machinery of politics does not move quite that quickly, but it would just be a matter of days because you can't go very long without a police commissioner. They never said anything about somebody stepping in and being acting.
Yeah.
So as far as we know, that didn't happen. So yeah.
All right.
All right. Let me set the stage. Can I set the stage?
Set the stage.
All right.
When crime and politics lock hands, the newspapers of Metropolis unite in protest. To Clark Kent of the Daily Planet falls a stern task. To the average person, it appears that Kent has taken on a job too big for him. But what no one realizes is that Clark Kent is above average. For in reality, he is the dynamic champion of the helpless and oppressed. The amazing, the sensational Superman.
That's two Spider-Man adjectives they gave him. Amazing and sensational.
And what I read, for those of you that are watching, is this narration blurb here at the top of the page, which I really dig those. Setting the scene, setting the stage kind of things. It reminds me so much of something you would hear on a Golden Age radio show by the narrator, just like this, before they get into the action of the actors and everything like that, setting the mood, the tone. And so
I like those so much that there was a time when I was going to suggest, let's read that box every time. And that will be the cold opening for the episode, you know, because it's basically the cold opening of the story.
Right. Yeah, so, absolutely.
But yeah. I did.
Okay. So when we get into the story, we start off with a armored car being robbed. And then we're told that it's due to racketeers doing this. And to reinforce the fact that it's racketeers, we show a gambling den, which we know here in the next panel. Those are always controlled by racketeers. So. You read the text and it tells you, and then you read in quotes the drawing, and that reinforces that racketeers are just. And I don't understand what has happened in Metropolis, because it both of these stories that we've talked about or will talk about, Metropolis never seemed to be that bad at one time. The evilness seemed to be dispersed. It would be this aspect, it would be that aspect. But here, all of a sudden, everybody is into this racketeering money, whether it be laundering, stealing, knocking over banks and armored cars, you know, all of this, all of a sudden. And yeah, I don't know where that came from.
It just became Gotham City all of a sudden.
All of a sudden. And a very, yeah, the dark part of Gotham City, not the bright futuristic metropolis kind of thing. It's like, yeah, all of a sudden it's slummy and dirty and just, you know, all the, yeah. So,
well, and the final panel on this page, the final panel on this page is, I love it because it's just, it's like Clark bursting into Perry White's office.
I tell you, White, there's a sinister link between certain crooked politicians and the criminal element in this town. We've got to do something about it.
And Perry White's immediate response is,
you're right, we will.
And it's like, yay!
And there was much rejoicing.
I out of nowhere. It's just, yeah. This could be something that has been building in the stories, particularly since there's a Superman serial in every issue of Action Comics, and Action Comics comes out regularly, whether it's monthly or bi-monthly, you know. They couldn't be building into this. It's like, no, all of a sudden, this issue is going to be this thing. And yeah, so.
And so not only are we learning that Metropolis is suddenly this, crime runs rife in the streets of Metropolis.
Yeah. Yep.
Not only do we learn that, we're also learning just in this first page that these criminals who are involved in all this racketeering, they're arrested and they're just immediately let go. There's just no, they can't make anything stick. There's something's going on in the system of justice that they have going. Yes, something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
Yep.
And Clark and the Daily Planet are going to figure it out.
Clark has had enough, and he and the Daily Planet are going to lead the way to cleaning up the streets. And so next we have a meeting of the leading papers. So this isn't all of the papers, but we've got the Daily Planet, we've got the Evening Standard, we've got the Morning Pictorial, and we've got a fourth that is not labeled. So at this time, if you want to know what papers are coming out in Metropolis, I would presume that all of these are daily papers also, the Daily Planet, the Morning Pictorial, and the Evening Standard. So could be that they come out different times of the day, like papers used to when papers were a big and a thing and people read them. But it looks like they're all dailies, except for the one here, the Lex Luthor looking dude in the blue suit and the red bow tie. No name of the paper, none of it. But I would presume it's probably a daily also.
Yeah, that drives me crazy for some reason. There's no reason why they couldn't have just. It's like I can't think of a fourth one.
Just go ahead and throw that. You did with the other three. Yeah. Go ahead, and throw that one in like there too.
It's four major newspapers in Metropolis. We can't bother to tell you what the fourth one's called.
Let's see. This is the Daily Planet here. Here would have been a good example too. The second paper. What's this one down at the bottom? Daily Planet. Yeah. The second paper, they could have had the name that they didn't include up here, and you could have learned the fourth there. But no, they went with Morning Pictorial, which they'd already named. So the
Daily Planet, I'm assuming, it probably comes out every morning. Same with the Morning Pictorial. And then I guess the Evening Standard probably comes out in the evening.
Right. Yeah. Probably covers the night beat, overnight, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We're at the mayor's office, and the mayor is... Let's see. Phil is the mayor and Kennedy is the first police commissioner. Although the way that they're sitting, I would think that should be reversed. But
that confused me immediately. And then I just,
you just got to go on with how they show it to you. So the mayor basically is telling Kennedy, hey, crap's gotten too bad. We're going to have to let you go. Thanks.
Buy it.
So long and thanks for all the fish. I know there's at least one fan here of that kind of stuff. So then we see the swearing in of who's going to turn out to be Larimore. And not Larimore, not the, was there a dog in a Bugs Bunny commercial whose name was Larimore? Or did he just drop that name? an image of that came to mind for some reason.
I don't know. First new commissioner does not have a name. The second one is Larimore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I think there are three that are assassinated because
you're right. Larimore is here. Okay. I apologize. You are correct. So Larimore is the third. The citizens dude is the fourth. Clark is the fifth. And there has to be a sixth by the end of the.
Because I know that by the third assassination, I remember thinking, all right, guys, there was one too many.
You're stretching it out too much. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I apologize. So there you go. We see the replacement for Kennedy sworn in. And then the very next panel is he's shot. Looks like coming out of his house going to work. I mean, he doesn't get anywhere and he's taken out.
It's that evening as the new commissioner leaves his home.
There you go. So
just strafed with bullets, a drive-by shooting.
The Daily Planet has that article here we see. So then the mayor, who the mayor is Phil, chooses Larimore for the next, the next commissioner. Larimore is sworn in, and then as he is driving from wherever the swearing-in ceremony was to someplace else, I would assume that all of it could happen at the courthouse. He would just be sworn in and go upstairs to his office or whatever, but that's not what happens. He's sworn in, he's driving somewhere, and his car blows up. So they knew, they being the bad guys, knew enough ahead of time to booby-trap his car and which car it was going to be and all that. So at the scene is Clark and Lois and Melvin Larkins of the Morning Pictorial. Now, first of all, I would think that Melvin Larkins is going to be used in the story because they made it a point to name him.
But
it never comes around to being anything.
There's a guy, I think there's a guy that shows up a little later. I think they just refer to a Morning Pictorial reporter being on the scene as well, but I don't think they give him it might be the same guy. I just remember.
So this is just a prop or a set piece to show you this panel, how bad things are, because all three are commenting about what we saw occur in the panel before. And it brings to mind this old adage that I remember reading somebody says about comic books, show them, don't tell them. But here we got both. They showed us, and of course the characters are telling us. So in case we didn't understand the significance, I guess, I don't know, but that's what happens. At some indiscriminate time later, we see the representative of the aforementioned by me, Citizens Committee, talking to Phil about, well, now we need a new police commissioner. And Mayor Phil's like, dog, I don't know if anybody's going to take it now.
You know, Phil Garson. I looked it up.
Where does it say Garson?
I looked it up online.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if they say his last name in the story, but Mayor Phil Garson.
Well, actually, in my notes, I do have Mayor Garson.
Oh, so they must have said it at some point.
Yeah, somewhere I picked that up, and I just haven't seen it this time. Phil Garson. Okay. Mayor of Metropolis during Superman's first reign, or what? Yeah, however you want to put it.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Step into the savage world of the Hyborian Age and journey through a land of sorcery, steel, and epic adventure with me, Stephen Orr, on Hither Came Conan. Together, we'll explore the legendary Conan the Barbarian comic series from Marvel Comics, starting with the groundbreaking first issue from 1970 and working our way through each epic tale, one issue at a time. Along the way, I'll also dive into any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Because when it comes to the titular Cimmerian, there's no such thing as too much adventure. Whether you're a diehard Conan fan or just discovering the greatest barbarian of all time, this podcast is your gateway to the blood-soaked battlefields, treacherous kingdoms, and forgotten treasures of Robert E. Howard's timeless creation. New episodes are packed with action, insights, and a little humor, all dedicated to the world of Conan and the creators who brought him to life on the comic book page. So sharpen your swords and subscribe to Hither Came Conan today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Crom demands it.
Into the boat.
Transmitter device activated. Coordinates set for Earth 2.
In 1961, in the pages of issue 123 of The Flash, Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash of Earth 1, travelled to another dimension, met Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash of Earth 2, and the DC Multiverse as we know it was born.
And in 1985, after many years of cross-dimensional adventures, DC Comics published the cataclysmic Crisis on Infinite Earths, and the DC Multiverse was gone.
But did you know that Barry Allen's Flash was not the first hero to meet a version of himself from another dimension?
Did you know that Jay Garrick wasn't even the first Golden Age character to return in the Silver Age of comics?
The scope of the pre-crisis DC multiverse reaches far beyond Earth 1 and Earth 2.
And the legacy of DC's Golden Age characters is a lot wider than the heroes you know like Flash, Green Lantern, Sandman and Starman.
On the Earth 2 podcast, we navigate the pre-crisis DC Comics multiverse of universes and other dimensions.
And we celebrate and explore the legacy of DC's Golden Age characters, including the legendary Justice Society of America, and a lot more besides.
So join me, Peter Watson.
And me, David Steele, and our occasional guests of friends, family and fellow podcasters.
For weekly dramatic readings and analysis of the pre-crisis DC Comics multiverse and the legacy of their Golden Age characters through the Silver and Bronze Ages of comics.
On
the Earth 2 podcast.
Transmatter Cube activated. Return coordinates set for Earth Prime.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
So the Citizens Committee, I guess, chairperson, representative, I would assume it's probably the chairperson of the Citizens Committee, about the increase of racketeering in Metropolis. And I added that last part myself because of what comes up in a later story about how that's set up that Stephen brought up. Is talking to the mayor, and the mayor says, "Say, since you're so interested in doing this, I'll make you the next police commissioner." And the dude's like, "Well, I'd be delighted, and I assure you the criminals will have to step lively if they hope to catch me off my guard." Later that day, I presume, the newly appointed police commissioner is walking home. He runs into Lois and Clark, and probably this Daily Pictorial dude, because he's still dressed the same, Melvin Larkins. So since those three are still together on the street, this must be like very, very soon after this car exploded.
Yeah.
And he's walking down the street. Clark and Lois acknowledge him. Word has gotten out that he's been made the new police commissioner, and he gets assassinated. Not a bullet. Turns out the briefcase that he's carrying blew up. And so he exploded all over the street, kind of like the car. And so now we have the Morning Pictorial reporter, Lois and Clark, all on scene, come to find out that the briefcase isn't even his briefcase. The briefcase he was carrying was the mayor's briefcase, which means that the bomb was intended for the mayor. And so, unfortunately, this latest police chief was killed by mistake, because actually they meant to get the mayor. I don't know why they would shift from the police commissioner to the mayor all of a sudden, but that's what they were going to do. Talky talk here. Basically, the point of this next little scene is that the mayor, he comes on scene too for whatever reason, I guess having heard the explosion maybe. And Lois talks the mayor into appointing Clark as the next police chief. Clark is kind of, he doesn't want to do it, but he rather easily accepts doing it because he knows that no matter what the bad guys are doing, they're not going to be able to hurt him. But he also knows that if he survives too many attempts to kill him, his secret will be out. He'll have to come up with some reason why. So I'm sure at this point he's like, yeah, okay, I'll be police chief, but man, I got to hurry up and figure this out because I can't have them shooting me and blowing me up and all that because, you know, I won't be hurt. So, yeah. So he and Lois kind of go back and forth a little bit. She wants him to be a man, right, and accept this assignment, if you will. And of course, Clark is hesitant because of what it could mean for exposing himself as Superman. Well, Lois gets fed up with his waffling and leaves him. I mean, she walks out of the scene. Later on, at Clark's office, Clark and Lois are talking. Looks like somebody was just here. He's beginning to take on the appearance of a corpse. I don't know. Maybe this is the Daily Pictorial dude grabbing an interview from the new police commissioner. I don't know, but he leaves and leaves Lois and Clark here.
That's the thing. Look at the, so looking at page 4,
mm-hmm.
Look at that first panel on the third row. You've got Lois, the right. guy from the morning pictorial,
right?
The mayor,
right.
and Clark.
Okay.
Well, the mayor and the other reporter, they're dressed exactly the same. They look like the same guy. So right. whoever that is leaving, it could be either one, frankly.
Could be the mayor, and that would kind of make sense that he has walked Clark up to his new office. He's kind of been introducing him to his new, you know, his new job, and then decides to leave Clark because he knows very soon Clark's going to die, and I don't want to be here when whatever happens so that it doesn't hurt me.
He should be turned into HR just for saying that.
It could be.
If that's the mayor,
Yep.
It's like, hey, I gave you this job. You already look like you're dead, so I'm going to leave.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead now. Yep. Plus, I mean, come on, the mayor, so what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4. Four police commissioners have been assassinated in very short order. He's got to know, oh, well, I'm standing next to the new target. Let me go ahead and get out of here.
Yeah. Yep.
Especially because he found out that the bomb was intended for him because it was his satchel and not the new police commissioner. So he's like, yeah, I'm outie. I'm going to go home and just stay there for 3 weeks until all of this is done. So Clark and Lois, the next several scenes here, Lois has an idea. She has an underworld associate. Maybe she has turned him to a CI, probably. But she saved him. She kept him from having to go to jail about something. And so she feels that he owes her. So she gives him a call. She sets up for him to pretend assassinate Clark and Clark win. That way it boosts Clark's, Q score? Is that what it's called when the public thinks highly of you when they're polled? Q score? Yeah. Anyways, we have a president currently that is all about looking good in the newspapers right now. So she sets that up. She and Clark go out. As soon as they go out, Clark is beset by somebody that threatens him. Sticks a gat in his ribs from behind. Can I say that word? Gat?
Is it? I think so.
His rod jams a rod in his ribs from behind. Well, that's another code word for the gun. Don't get all weird.
If I had some pearls, I would be clutching them.
Clutching. Yeah. And just to show how evil this dude is, and probably to tell us that turns out this dude is not who just called Lois. He pistol whips Lois to get her to be quiet while he is holding Clark at gunpoint. Now, because of that, Clark starts to roll up his shirt sleeves on his...
Well, Clark still thinks, even at that point,
that
good
it's a
for
fake.
You, Lois. You're making it look just like the real thing. He still thinks it's all fake.
I don't think so. It didn't look fake to me. Looks like she got her jaw jacked there by the pistol.
Clark just thinks she's that good of an actor.
So now it's Clark and the pseudo-thug who takes a shot at him, and Clark is able to dodge it because he's Superman. Now, the guy doesn't shoot to miss. The guy is real, and he's trying to assassinate Clark. So all of this that Clark is doing in order to accomplish, he is having to do using his superpowers. So he is staying alive as Superman, not as Clark. Guy tries to shoot him, doesn't work, throws down after one shot. Guy throws down his gun, jumps Clark and starts to choke him with both of his hands and realizes that that's not working, which you would think that that would kind of freak somebody out. I mean, if you're squeezing somebody's throat and it's not giving way, that's kind of a sign that something is not right. So a little conversation, you know, Clark's like, yeah, that's not working, is it? You're just a weakling. And dude is like, man, I was trying with all my strength. What's going on here? Punches Clark, gets him down on the ground, throws a punch at him, and Clark dodges his head, and he punches the ground and hurts and distracts the thug, at which point Clark raises up and gives him the big headbutt, knocking him out. Everybody's kind of recovering from all this. Clark is pretending to be Clark, even though everything he just did was Superman. I mean, he's not affected by any of it. Lois is still there, so he has to pretend to be affected. The dude that Lois called, and I keep saying dude, I think I'm positive she gave him a name.
Butch.
Yeah, of course. Butch shows up now and tries to assault Clark, and Clark takes him out, thinking that he is the backup, or actually thinking Clark is still thinking that the dude that he just took care of was the one that Lois called. This second dude must be for real. So he acts like the second dude is for real, whereas he kind of played around with the first dude, which we know reading it's reversed. The second dude is Butch. This is the play one.
It's like an episode of Three's Company.
Something, yeah. And Butch just, Clark punches him once and Butch runs off because he's been hit by a crowbar, essentially. And he's like, you know, I was going to play, but I'm not playing this. This is not, you know, not my thing. So he takes off. Officer Casey, no, we don't know that it's Casey, but an officer shows up. Clark and Lois point out that, hey, you know, this dude just tried to kill your police commissioner. And you need to take him in. Clark and Lois head off to, I don't know, wherever they're going. And out of nowhere, Clark notices a couple workmen. Actually, to me, they look like window cleaners on one of the raised and lowerable scaffoldings, or whatever those things are called, that they lower from the top of the building that people stand in.
Yeah.
He thinks to himself in this word balloon, that's odd. Though those workmen wear rough clothes, they're wearing neatly polished Oxfords instead of work shoes. Say, my telescopic vision may have revealed something important. Does this pan out? Well, yeah, it's not that it pans out, but he uses it. So, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Next page, he goes and we're told that he removes his outer garments because now he has started wearing his Superman outfit under his clothes. But yet when he takes off his clothes, he bundles them up and puts the bundle of clothing under his cape somehow, which comes up either later in this story or in the next one that he does that. We've heard him say that a time or two. That's a recent thing about changing to Superman and changing back and whatnot. Doesn't always come up, but.
And not only I don't remember if it's this one or the next one. Not only do they mention it, they don't call his cape a cape. They refer to it as a cloak.
Mm-hmm. A cloak. So he changes because he's going to investigate these two guys. He's suspicious enough that he wants to check them out now. On his way to them, from the time that Clark saw to the time that Superman gets to them, we're told by the narrator that they have thrown an incendiary bomb through the window into the mayor's office, which is right where the scaffold thing is at when Superman sees it. So Superman gets there just in time. He sees him do this. He grabs the two of them, slams them together, probably crushing one or both skulls in doing that time. I can't imagine he can do that lightly, you know, tap him enough to knock him out. And then for, I guess, because they're not in full consciousness, they fall off the thing. I wish I could remember the name of that. They fall off the scaffolding. I'll use that, although that's not the right term. It's not what this is. Superman goes after him, grabs them both, sets them both down on the ground, lets them go because he's got to go back up to get the bomb that was thrown in the office. Now, by the time he gets there, the office is aflame. We have the mayor. Oh, here it is. Garrison. Right there's his last name. Garrison is a secretary in the office. The office is going up. Superman comes in the window, kind of huddles them against a non-burning wall and covers them with this cape also, in essence, which is removing them from the flame. And then I'm sure the cape is of whatever Kryptonian fiber, so it gives them protection. He blows out the fire in front of them, extinguishes it. So the mayor and his secretary are safe. Superman jumps back out the window down to the ground to go after the thugs, but they're gone. So he doesn't know where they went. He goes to a phone booth and changes. No, that hasn't occurred yet. He goes into an alley, changes back into Clark Kent, and goes back to the, well, doesn't go back to City Hall because since he just came out of the mayor's office, this building that he's at right here must be City Hall.
Yeah.
So he changes to Clark, goes back in, goes up to the mayor's office. And by this time, all the official people are there, you know, because of what just happened. The mayor's office got firebombed. He was physically threatened and everything like that. Runs into Sergeant Casey. Casey is Clark Kent's and Lois Lane's, not really a CI, but he is their contact that they consistently use with the police.
He's like their Commissioner Gordon, basically, at this point.
Yeah, he doesn't necessarily feed them information as reporters, but he is the one that they most frequently call when they need a police presence to wrap something up or to ask a question as reporters or something like that. Now, it has become Officer Casey.
Yeah.
But Officer Casey is not coming to them as reporters. Officer Casey is coming to Clark as the police commissioner because a tip has been received about a robbery at a jeweler's at noon. So the tip was where, and the tip was exactly when, which makes me very suspicious of the tip because that's an awful lot of very precise information. Smells like setup to me.
But yeah.
We'll see. Maybe in 1941, maybe the bad guys didn't set up the good guys like that. I don't know. Casey drives Clark to the jeweler. We see that there is a probably massive police presence. The entire joint is staked out, and they're just waiting for noon. Yeah, they're waiting for noon to come around for something to happen. Clark is thinking, if this place actually is going to be attacked, I want to be in a position to really do something about it. So in the midst of the stakeout, inside, Clark gets up and says, excuse me, I'm going to go over here, which, yeah. Casey is suspicious, because Clark does this, of his police commissioner. I don't think there's any reason for him to be suspicious. He's the police commissioner. He could be getting up to do anything. Maybe he's going to call in reinforcements, call in the National Guard. I mean, they do that in L.A. all the time. Oh, no, sorry. Call in the National, you know, whatever. But Casey's suspicious, sets one of his other officers to watch Clark. I don't trust him. Tail him, see what he's doing. Clark knows automatically, a policeman playing truant officer for Casey. I've got to dodge him, but how? He thinks. Ah, here we go. The police officer rushes into the phone booth, which I guess means that Clark went into it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a one-person phone booth, and when the officer gets in there, he sees there's nobody else here. And I'm wondering, like, well, in order to go into the phone booth, you had to have seen Clark do it. Now, if you saw Clark go into the phone booth, you wouldn't rush in. Because you know, well, there's no way out.
Yeah.
So you would only get suspicious if he had been in there a long time, and then you'd go to see. And once again, Clark's not in there, so how the heck did he get out? Yeah. So this is kind of specious to me as far as what all goes on here. It's weird. But police officer goes into the phone booth. Clark is not there. Clark traps him in the phone booth so that he can do his Clark Superman thing, and he doesn't have to worry about being seen.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
Step into the savage world of the Hyborian Age and journey through a land of sorcery, steel, and epic adventure with me, Stephen Orr, on Hither Came Conan. Together, we'll explore the legendary Conan the Barbarian comic series from Marvel Comics, starting with the groundbreaking first issue from 1970 and working our way through each epic tale, one issue at a time. Along the way, I'll also dive into any other Conan comics I can get my hands on. Because when it comes to the titular Cimmerian, there's no such thing as too much adventure. Whether you're a diehard Conan fan or just discovering the greatest barbarian of all time, this podcast is your gateway to the blood-soaked battlefields, treacherous kingdoms, and forgotten treasures of Robert E. Howard's timeless creation. New episodes are packed with action, insights, and a little humor, all dedicated to the world of Conan and the creators who brought him to life on the comic book page. So sharpen your swords and subscribe to Hither Came Conan today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Crom demands it.
Into the boat.
Transmitter device activated. Coordinates set for Earth 2.
In 1961, in the pages of issue 123 of The Flash, Barry Allen, the Silver Age Flash of Earth 1, travelled to another dimension, met Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash of Earth 2, and the DC Multiverse as we know it was born.
And in 1985, after many years of cross-dimensional adventures, DC Comics published the cataclysmic Crisis on Infinite Earths, and the DC Multiverse was gone.
But did you know that Barry Allen's Flash was not the first hero to meet a version of himself from another dimension?
Did you know that Jay Garrick wasn't even the first Golden Age character to return in the Silver Age of comics?
The scope of the pre-crisis DC multiverse reaches far beyond Earth 1 and Earth 2.
And the legacy of DC's Golden Age characters is a lot wider than the heroes you know, like Flash, Green Lantern, Sandman and Starman.
On the Earth 2 podcast, we navigate the pre-crisis DC Comics multiverse of universes and other dimensions.
And we celebrate and explore the legacy of DC's Golden Age characters, including the legendary Justice Society of America, and a lot more besides.
So join me, Peter Watson.
And me, David Steele, and our occasional guests of friends, family and fellow podcasters.
For weekly dramatic readings and analysis of the pre-crisis DC Comics multiverse and the legacy of their Golden Age characters through the Silver and Bronze Ages of comics.
On
the Earth 2 podcast.
Transmatter Cube activated. Return coordinates set for Earth Prime.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
We have a panel of Casey wondering where Benchley is. Benchley is the officer, and Kent. So he's wondering where they're at. Clark said he was taken off to do something, so I don't know why Casey would think that he's coming back, but okay. Clark goes and changes. Is this where it says? Yeah. Strips off his... No, just says he strips off his outer garments. Da-da-da. Yeah, okay. We almost have a hanging Superman here. We see him just climbing into a window, so I guess we're going to presume he flew up to the window and he's just climbing in. So, yeah. Okay. A window, I would presume, yeah. I'm going to say it's in the same building. I don't know why he went... Why not just stake out a building across the street? And yeah, I don't know. But he's in a window. I'm going to say in the same building. He sees a car come zooming up the street, and we see that it turns and crashes right through the front door of the jeweler's exchange. When it does, the officers in there open up Tommy guns, pistols, what have you. Whoever's in the car releases gas from the front of the car. The car, we find out, is not damaged by the small arms fire, so they're assuming it's armored, bulletproof. The glass, the gas, excuse me, is some sort of anesthetic gas, so the dudes in the car are not bothered by it, but now all of the police officers outside the car are rendered asleep from the gas that the car releases. So this was the plan all along, was a setup. They knew the cops were going to be there. They made this car to go, not be stopped by small weapons fire, put itself in a position by crashing into the jeweler's exchange to release the sleeping gas and knock out all the police. Okay. Yeah. And so it happens just like that. And then they leave. What does this say? Suddenly into the building races. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no. Yeah. So yeah. They leave. The whole point was to knock out the officers and they were going to leave. That's all they were. That's what the setup was for, was to do that.
Yeah. I don't know if when Superman shows up, it's like, because they literally just flip a Yui there in the store. So I don't know if they're like, holy crap, Superman's here. And so they just run. You know, maybe they were going to get out and start filling bags full of jewelry, but
I don't know. Maybe it's kind of weird. And if you guys hear anything, a gentleman that does our lawn is here and sounds like he's just started cutting the grass. So
okay.
I'm at an exterior window. And so momentarily the rider will be right beneath my window, although it is shut.
I literally have a window air conditioner right there that's practically full blast. Did that last year, too, when we recorded during the summer. And the noise thing takes it out. So
yeah, I was going to say, I don't hear anything on your end. I don't hear you. What did you say? No, I'm kidding. That's a joke.
That's not funny.
Okay, so the car takes off. Superman runs after it, leaps over it in a tall leap. Yeah, anyways, I forget what that part of the
leaps
Superman
over.
Intros.
Tall buildings in a single bound.
In a single bound. That's it. Jumps in front of the car and braces himself and then lets the car run into him, trashing the car. Now the car is inoperable and the driver, there was only one person in it apparently. The driver jumps out and attempts to flee. Superman runs him down and the narrator tells us the police have charged out of the gas-filled jewelers exchange now as they so it knocked him out for like I don't know a minute and a half and that was it. Now they're okay and the police that were in the jewelers are running down the street to nab the dude. The driver of the holdup car is none other than your former police commissioner Kennedy.
Look at that. Look at the narration there on that second panel.
But a flying tackle over the space of 100 yards brings down the fleeing criminal.
So Superman jumped 100 yards.
And that guy's spine has been snapped in half.
Oh, he is smushed. He is absolutely smushed. And why would Superman stand there and wait for somebody to run 100 yards? What is the record for a 100-yard dash right now? Like 5 or 6 seconds? So or 10 seconds. We'll see. He's slow. So he stood there and waited 10 seconds and then leapt 100 yards to land on him.
Yeah, because he's certainly much closer to the guy than 100 yards than the guy gets out of the car and starts to run.
Yeah, he could have taken one step and snatched him up by the collar just right there in that panel, you know, just boom. And that, but no, he waited for him. He's like, almost, now. And Superman is the cat. And Kennedy is the mouse, and he's toying with him. He's like, I'm going to let him think he got away.
And it looks like he's tackling him. It looks like he's got his head in his hands.
By the head. He's tackling him by the back of the head, not around the feet like you would think. No, he's going to give him some asphalt burn there.
Yeah, so the fact that in the very next panel, the guy's on his feet, he looks okay. He's got his hands cuffed behind him.
Oh, yeah, Superman's just holding his hand. Yeah.
He's dead. His neck snapped. You can't land on somebody's head like that after leaping 100 yards.
Right, yeah. And smushing him.
Yeah.
Wow. That was kind of brutal.
Exposing Kennedy is a great feather in my cap, but of even greater importance is capturing you.
What? This is Casey, maybe?
Yeah, that's Casey.
Hang on a sec. See if somebody yelling for me or something? Huh. I thought I
heard
somebody yelling.
Dude, if ice raids your house, I'm going to freak out.
Oh, they will have a freaking fight on their hands, let me tell you. They better be planning to take me out. Now you have me. Now you don't. So, Casey, Superman is a bad guy, I guess? He's on the most wanted list for Metropolis? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he destroyed that whole neighborhood. He destroyed all that car factory.
Oh, so you're talking about, oh, okay.
He's got a
Superman
rap sheet for miles.
Okay. So Casey tries to shoot him. When Superman makes a move, Casey tries to shoot him.
Right.
God. Superman runs around, you know, to whatever alley. Let's see. Yeah, it doesn't say here either. Retrieving his outer garments. So he changes back to Clark, goes back to the Daily Planet, and gives them an article. I don't know when he wrote this. I guess there's a time gap here in between these. About the Kennedy being exposed and all that. And we have the wah-ha-ha moment here in the last panel.
You might be a good commissioner,
Lois says, and Clark retorts,
I'll stick to reporting.
So it's a wah-wah kind of thing. Yeah, so, and so there we go. Oh, I know what it is. I bet he's talking to his partner because now I hear there's two people. Okay. Okay. And so I think that was, that's the end of that. And is it's certainly all I have to say.
I want, look at this last panel. Look at the way Lois and Clark are dressed, especially Lois. And then we're going to go, because we made a joke at one point, how it felt like these guys were being assassinated within hours of each other.
Mm-hmm. Is she wearing the same outfit? Clark seems to have the same suit on that he's had on the whole
story. Yeah, but he, you know, both he and Perry are look like they're dressed exactly the same from page one to the final page.
Right, okay.
But they, you know, they're dudes. They wear suits and stuff.
Right, yeah, that's what dudes do.
So here is Lois and Clark.
Right.
Page two of the story. The first guy hasn't even been assassinated yet. So everything from the moment that the new police commissioner is sworn in,
right?
Everything else happens the same day.
Oh, you think it all happens the same day? Okay.
Yeah, because Lois is wearing the same thing throughout the entire story.
Okay.
So in the same, so let's say that morning is the swearing in, but here's where it gets weird. Here's where the timeline doesn't match up at all. So the first guy is assassinated that evening.
Right, right.
As he leaves his home. The second guy, it says on the day that the second guy is sworn in, then he's assassinated. But Lois is still wearing the same thing. So let's just say that when the second guy is assassinated, that starts a new day. And then it's the same day for the rest of the story. Still, there's a lot of crap that happens.
Yeah, either way, whatever the one day is, there's, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're just, I mean, just look at page three there. First panel, the guy's getting sworn in. Second panel, the guy is leaving. Third panel, his car blows up. He's dead.
Right.
Next row, the reporters are like, oh my gosh, how could this happen? Second panel in the second row, that's when the mayor's like, the committee guy comes and asks the mayor, why are you not doing anything about this crime? Eh, you're the new commissioner.
Yep. I'll make you commissioner then.
Yeah. So yep. Then the next row, by the end of the next row, three panels later, that right. guy is dead.
Is dead. Yeah. So and he's got two swearing ins and two deaths right there on one page.
And then the next page. Yeah, it's just so not only is are two guys assassinated that same day, Clark is given the job. He moves into the office. Lois plans out this elaborate scheme for some thug that she knows to attack Clark right. to make him look like a hero. But instead, an actual assassin, the same day that two other guys were assassinated, they learn that immediately, oh, Clark's the new commissioner, go get him. They try to assassinate him. Clark thinks it's an act. That is my favorite scene in the whole story, frankly, is the fight between him and the thug. Just the whole, he
the
punches.
The real one?
Huh?
The real thug?
The real thug, yeah. Mm-hmm. The guy goes to punch him and he moves and hits the sidewalk and then Clark headbutts him. It's just so much happens in this same day that it's just, it's crazy.
Very much, yeah.
So not only does the two guys are assassinated, Clark's given the job, there's an assassination attempt on him, and then immediately after, the fake assassination attempt happens.
Right, there's a second assassination attempt, which is not related to the first, so it could have happened any time, but it happens right after.
Yeah, and then immediately after that, two guys throw a firebomb in the mayor's right. office.
Right. After that, he goes out. He sees the dudes. He's suspicious. The dudes firebomb the mayor. Superman rescues the mayor, goes back down, changes back, goes back up to the mayor's office, which is you know, what the police commissioner responsibly would do. He's pulled aside by Casey. Casey says, hey, yo, we got a snitch here. He goes to check that out. Yeah, all of that. I could see all of that definitely happening in one day just because of how one thing seems to follow another. There really doesn't seem to be much of a gap in anything where you could just insert time.
Yep. And this is one of those stories that really, I mean, you could say it about a lot of the Golden Age stories, but as far as, I guess, story structure, what this story is trying to do, it's super basic. All the story is trying to tell us is that Metropolis is overrun by crime, and it's because the police commissioner is crooked, and he lets all the criminals go, and he helps, you know, he's a thief too, and he's making all this money. And, I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
And so to get us to fill in all the rest of the stuff, they had to kill three other commissioners. They had to firebomb the mayor's office. They had to rob a jewelry store. They had to fill in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you get that just back to back things happening one after another. You get that even if most of this didn't take place in the same day, it would still feel like that because the way it all just.
Definitely. And unless they did something, you know, which they didn't, there's nothing that tells us that it's not from A to B to C to D to E, you know, there's no break. So, yeah, this is a hell day, man. For Metropolis, for Clark, for the papers to try to keep up with what's going on, that's a full day.
All right. Anything else you want to say about this issue?
I don't think so. It's fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. A lot of laugh out loud moments that, you know, weren't supposed to be laugh out loud moments, but they still are.
That's the Golden Age for you, I think. Yeah. It's, you know, I don't think they necessarily took, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I don't think they took what they were doing as seriously as people do now.
Oh, hell no.
You know, everybody wants to win a Pulitzer and write the next great novel in a comic book nowadays. Whereas back then, they wanted to write something that a kid would plunk down a dime for and you know, that was it.
Yep. Yep. There it's like, you know, the seasons of TV, the way like a show like X-Files, for example, you know, there was a big story going on, but they still had 22 episodes per season. And so like 50, 60% of those would just be these Monster of the Week stories that were just fillers.
Right.
To get this. And that it's so like all of these Golden Age stories are just they're just the filler episodes that because they're not telling there's not a continual story going on. But
right. Yeah. They haven't gotten to the point where they try to do multiple things. You know, there's not the mythos story going on with the fillers in between. There is just fillers. That's all there is just. And maybe a part of that comes from the fact that a lot of these guys started with newspaper strips.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know, I don't know how long it took really. Well, no, I take that back. I think some places like Terry and the Pirates, I think that had some extended stories and things like that. But most of your non-serious strips were very much one-off, one day or maybe a day to the next or something like that. And that was as far as it was planned. Yeah. I think maybe some of your adventure strips and the Phantom and stuff like that, maybe they were extended overarching or overarching, whichever word it's supposed to be. But not very much.
In our next episode, Metropolis plunges into panic as the shadowy unknown X unleashes a crime wave so ruthless even Superman's fists can't force a confession. When Clark Kent's investigation points to a respectable citizen's leader, our hero uncovers a shocking betrayal that pits friend against champion. Tune in to watch Superman unmask the true kingpin and deliver justice with thunderous cape-billowing flair. That's going to be next time on episode 88, when Ed and I are going to take a look at The Unknown X, the Superman story from World's Finest Comics number 2, published in May of 1941. So until then, folks, I'm Steven. That's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao, Bella.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Stephen or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
Hello and welcome to the Superman Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my, it's my right. Why do I have the left, right? Because that's north.
If you're facing north, then I would be to your right from Kansas.
Yeah. So I'm going to do that one more time. Actually, I'm going to fix it real quick.
Oh, okay.
In the notes.
That way I never read it wrong.
Okay. The police summon Clark to a jeweler. Where they have